I'll let you into a little secret on our schedule that has the time slot for the talk down to 6:50 to 7:10. So being as it's 7:11, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been great to be with you. No, I'll, if you bear with me for maybe 15 minutes, I'll just share a few thoughts. I wasn't here this morning. I've been home for the weekend to Leicester for my uncle's 50th for a family celebration. We went out to a kind of medieval banquet, and I ate chicken and a jacket potatoes with my hands last night. They stripped us of all cutlery to kind of give them a medieval experience. And then on the way over here this afternoon, there was a little small fire on my train, so we all had to get off, and Rich had to come and detour and save me. So I've had enough excitement for this weekend, so I won't get overly excited on the mic that kind of sometimes, yeah, reacts to it. But I mean, I am really excited about what I've got to share. I'm just going to share with you a few thoughts. And I'm the sort of person that when I was younger, I used to be really frustrated if the person speaking left me with more questions than answers. I was like, I've come to listen to you so that you give me the answers. Don't give me questions. But now that I'm a bit older and maybe a bit more thoughtful, I quite like being posed questions. So, yeah, I'm going to leave you with a few of those, but hopefully some thoughts as well. I'm going to speak to you, I'll say before I start, so my name's Rael. I spoke here a few months ago, so I recognised quite a few faces from when I was here. Little bit brief background, Zoe kind of mentioned it, but essentially the job that I do at Wirral YFC and have done for the past 2.25 years would not exist without the support of this church. This church has been very generous with the financial gifts and also, you know, the heart for what we do. My job, I remember going on, being introduced at the YFC commissioning 2 years ago, and then I was introduced saying, we've been praying for a boys worker and here's the answer to the prayers kind of thing. And it was kind of awkward because then I walked out. But essentially, you know, you guys are the answers to prayers of us for partnerships with local churches and churches who do partner with us in the gospel. And I remember saying that when I was here a few months ago, that there's I feel a genuine gospel partnership with you guys because, yeah, my job exists because of this church. And, you know, and so I thank you for that. I'm going to speak to you this evening about just a few thoughts from Jeremiah chapter 29, and Jeremiah chapter 29 contains one of the most famous and most quoted verses in the Bible. If I started, this isn't a test, it doesn't matter if you don't recognize this verse, but if I started and said, for I know the plans I have for you, a lot of people could probably finish that verse, yeah? Plans to prosper you and not to harm you, to give you a hope and a future. It is arguably now, after John 3:16, possibly the second most quoted Bible verse. People, you know, it's a great fridge magnet verse, isn't it? You know, you wake up in the morning, you know, you look at it, or you have it embossed onto your mirror. I know the plans that I have for you, to prosper you and not to harm you, to give you a hope and a future. And I don't know if you feel like that every day. I mean, probably at different points in my life, that has been very clear and evident for me to see that God does want to prosper me and not to harm me, that he does have a hope and a future for me. Maybe there have been other days where that's been a little bit harder to see. Across the spectrum in this room, we might be in different seasons on that. But I think it's important when we look at a verse, it's fine to quote a verse in isolation sometimes, you know, and we can claim that promise. But if we, you know, I want us to pan out a little bit and go, what might that look like? What might it look like for God to have plans for us, have a hope and a future for us? And what even, in the context of where that was written in Jeremiah, what's he saying? Because if you move one verse back, I don't know if anybody knows, you know, verse 10 is about 70 years of exile in Babylon. So essentially, you will be in exile for 70 years, but I will bring you back. I will still be faithful to you. Now, when you take a step back and go that God has a hope and a future whilst we are effectively slaves in Babylon, that fleshes out that verse a little bit, doesn't it? You know, how can God have a hope and a future and want to prosper you whilst you're also in exile? But I want to go back, and the verse I really want to home in on that I think will hopefully give us a bit of an understanding on this is going back a few more, is verse 7 says, this is God's instruction to them. He's given them a few instructions on, you know, settle where you are and, you know, marry and grow in this place. And then he says, seek the welfare, or in some versions it says, seek the peace and prosperity. So seek the welfare of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. And the question I guess I want to pose you with is, what does it look to seek the welfare of the place that you are in? So for us, it's, you know, for this church, it's West Kirby. For Wirral YFC, you know, it's the region of the Wirral. I actually live over in Liverpool and get to kind of see the best of both parts of Merseyside. But what does it look like to seek the welfare of the place that you are in? And especially when we understand it in the context of actually when it was spoken to these people, they were in exile. They were oppressed in this place that they were in. They didn't have freedom to do exactly. They had been carried into that place. It's interesting that God says, the place that I have carried you into. So even there, God is at work. But they are in a place that actually isn't seeking their best. So the Israelites were not they weren't the priority of the Babylonian kingdom. They came under the rule of somebody who didn't seek their welfare, and yet they were still told to seek the welfare of the place that they were in. So what does it look like to seek the welfare of the place that you are in when the place that you are in doesn't seek your welfare? And I don't know if it feels like that to you guys. I mean, I want to be careful because I'm aware that the world that we live in, a lot of our brothers and sisters are going under real serious persecution. And I don't want to kind of belittle what they are going through. But I also want us to pause and think, actually, you know, I'm not a historian, but probably in the lifetime of some people here, I think what you'll have seen that in our country, what we've had is that the mood, the atmosphere has changed from where maybe even some of our lifetimes, the Christian viewpoint or the Christian kind of values were celebrated and were welcome. And then we went through a phase where they were kind of neutral and, you know, yeah, maybe not. And now I think we're approaching a point where the Christian values and voice is viewed with hostility, is viewed with suspicion, and is actually, you guys aren't welcome to have a say here. Your voice isn't relevant. And actually, your voice is harmful, and we don't want, you know, you ask some people what they think of the Christian voice or the Christian church, and it's, they are intolerant, they are, you know, they are outdated, they are naive, these things that actually, there's been that shift. But I want us to look at actually how, you know, that doesn't mean that we don't still have a place, and actually seeking the welfare of a place that doesn't necessarily seek your welfare, there's a blueprint for that in God's word. And I'm going to just as we go on to, I'm going to come with three bullet points. I like bullet points. And essentially, these three bullet points are saying the same thing in three different ways. But the three I'm going to give you, and then I'll come back to each one, is the first one is to pursue kingdom living. The second one is to be the church. And the third one is to shine a light. And they're all essentially part of the same thing. But pursuing kingdom living, I think that's it. I want to make the distinction between pursuing the kingdom and pursuing kind of moral values, because I do believe there is some overlap, but actually I don't believe that in God's word, I think we're called to pursue the kingdom more than we are called to pursue morality. God does tell us to flee from the immoral or flee from wrong, but he doesn't say flee from the immoral and just become more moral. He says pursue the kingdom or seek after the spirit or, you know, all these different things. And if you look at the kingdom values, if you read Matthew 5 where Jesus lays out the blueprint for the Beatitudes as he calls it, the values that are blessed, those who are blessed, it's not always the ones that we expect. You know, it's blessed are those who mourn, blessed are you when you are persecuted. It's not, you know, it'd be quite nice, I guess, if it was blessed are you when you are comfortable, blessed are you when everyone has something good to say about you, blessed are you when everybody invites your voice into the equation. But it's not always that way. The kingdom values that Jesus lays out in Matthew 5 often, you know, they play with actually our own comfort zone and what we maybe would want for our lives. But I want us to think about pursuing the kingdom. And actually, I really believe that we should seek for the miraculous in the world that we live. But I want us to think about how, for me, the miraculous can often be found in the everyday. So the miraculous is, God can step in with healings. God can step in with words of knowledge, and these things are amazing and they are miraculous. But I think what we also see in the miraculous is sometimes God opening doors that just you think that would not have happened were it not for God doing that. And we can often overlook them or kind of get used to them. But seeing young people who are open to the message, where they've never heard anything like it before, and they step in and they hear it, that is something miraculous that we should celebrate. And for me, you know, there is no greater miracle in many ways than seeing a person who has been living for themselves, whether they are 8 years old or 80 years old, somebody who's been living for themselves, who has their life transformed and suddenly wants to live for Jesus. That is the ultimate miracle. But even in the everyday, I was speaking to a friend of mine recently who is a pastor at a church over in Liverpool, and he's been doing some work in a local school. And he actually was in a lesson recently where an RE teacher said to him, in front of the sixth form, he said, if any of them wanted to become Christians, could you tell them how to do that? To me, that is miraculous, especially in the time that we live, because those avenues are getting more and more difficult to have room for the gospel in our schools. And that a teacher would turn to him and say, can you tell these kids, if they wanted to, how to become a Christian? I thought that was amazing. And I want us to think, I just want us to think in our own lives, in our church's lives, and where you are placed, that seeking after the kingdom values, the things that God calls us to, the things of, you know, living humbly and pursuing peace and justice and mercy. I think there's a real need for that in the world that we live in right now, to be pursuing the things of the kingdom. And I think that as we live those things out, as we live for the kingdom values, that we will see the miraculous in our everyday lives. The second one is to be the church. And I'm really passionate about this, that, you know, as I stand in a church, as I see this church, that God has chosen to work through the local church. I don't know necessarily why he chose that to be his blueprint. Maybe, you know, you see sometimes situations in churches or between churches and you go, was it the wisest plan? But God is very clear that people will know. One of my favorite chapters in the Bible is John 17, where Jesus prays for us effectively before he goes to the cross. I often think if somebody said to you, would you like to listen in on a conversation between the Son and the Father where they talk about you? I would like to hear that, and that is in John 17. So look it up if you haven't read it for a while. And before Jesus goes to the cross, in his time of just, you know, we're probably aware of just the strain that Jesus was under, the unimaginable kind of spiritual turmoil that he was in. But he takes the time in that chapter to pray for us. And the one thing that he says is keep them one, because if they are one, people will know that this is something. You know, this is something real. And that challenges me, because I don't know if I often see that lived out. You know, how often are we when, you know, whether it's in the person next to us, or whether it's in the church across the road, or whether it's in someone, you know, across the city who does things a little bit different to us, how often do we pursue that oneness that Jesus, as he was about to go to the cross, prays to the Father that we would pursue? But I really believe passionately that when the church is the church as it's called to be, that is the hope of the city that you're placed in, of the village that you're placed in, of the town you're in. And there's a couple of things. It's interesting, because I'm going to mention a couple of things that aren't actually Wirral YFC, but I'll come back to Wirral YFC. I was at a meeting recently, and it just really stood out to me. There's an organization called Safer Families, who you may have heard of. I don't know if they've been to the church yet, but our boss, our former boss at Wirral, Martin Dixon, now works for them. But I'm not here to do a pitch for Safer Families, but I was at a meeting they were running with our church leaders, and the thing that stood out to me was they are an organisation that deal with kind of supporting families and preventing children from having to go into care, and trying to help families learn how to parent and to look after their children in a safe environment. And it's an amazing work, and I believe it really lives out kingdom values. But the point I think that really stood out to me more than any other was that this charity had started in America, and a kind of wealthy philanthropist from the UK, Sir Peter Vardy, wanted to bring it back to the UK. And he was meeting with some high-ranking politicians. And what they said was, this sounds brilliant, but does it have to be Christians that do it? Does it have to be the church? And he, you know, God, I think, clearly gave him a wisdom in that moment. Basically, all he responded with was, well, no, it doesn't have to be. If you can find another group of people who are going to gather, mobilize, and do this sacrificially and voluntarily, fine, let them do it as well. And the guy kind of paused for a minute, and he's like, okay, it can be the church. Because actually, when the church really is the church, it still has a reputation, you know, in our country that it can, that it does love and serve communities in a way that no other community and no other body of people can. And I'm not denigrating any other kind of group of people, but I'm celebrating the church and what the church can be. And even things like the fact, you know, Safer Families have got over 200 volunteers in the Merseyside region in a matter of months. Like, that speaks to me of the heart of the church to still seek the welfare of its community, seek the welfare of its places. That's in Merseyside alone. Another one would be the fact that the Salvation Army currently has the contract for safe houses for those that have been freed from trafficking. Where the church is being the church and living out the heart of Jesus for justice, for mercy, for compassion, for community, that actually I think that not only speaks to the world of what the church can be, but it creates more avenues to speak Jesus to them. That when you are living out what the church is and can be, it gives you more opportunity. You know, there's been conversations with people that I've had where they say, well, actually, if you're spending all your time doing that, do you get time to speak about Jesus? And actually, to me, the two go hand in hand. I'd recommend a book called Generous Justice by Tim Keller, and he lays that really clearly. Just God's heart for justice and God's heart for speaking the gospel, they go hand in hand, and they create more opportunities and avenues for each other. So when the church is the church, it is still the hope of local communities and our nation and our world. The third one is to shine a light. And I just want to read very quickly from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 4 to 7, that says, "The God of this age has blinded the minds of unbelievers so that they cannot see the light of the gospel that displays the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we preach is not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' made his light shine in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of God's glory displayed in the face of Christ. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us." It's another incredible kind of passage. I just want to, as I kind of land with a third point, I want to say that each of us have a light to shine. And that is, you know, it is a children's song, This Little Light of Mine, but it's actually a profound and powerful truth that we each have our own light to shine. Wherever you are placed, individually, in your street, in your workplace, in your community, you have an individual light to shine, but collectively, as a church here, there's a light that shines out into this community from here. And as an organization, that's what we seek to do as well. But I find that jars of clay line very comforting, because, you know, there are some great speakers, and I look at the team that I'm a part of, and they, you know, there's some very, very gifted people, but actually the power doesn't lie with us. The power to shine out the light of Jesus doesn't lie with us. I'm quite comforted to be called a jar of clay. You know, it's nothing glamorous. You know, even on my best day, the power is not mine, the power is God's. And even on this church's best day, the power is God's. We are just jars of clay. It doesn't lower our value. It's just in terms of where the real power is, we are just ornaments that display the power of God. I look at this and I say, the God of this age has blinded the eyes of unbelievers. And I want us to think, actually, this thing of, it's not us against other people. So if people don't see things the way that we do or don't support our work, it's not us versus them, it is us for them. It is always us for them. Our war isn't against other people. It's against the forces of darkness that we seek to push back through the work here in the church, through the work of a ministry like YFC. And it's always us for them, not us against them. And I just want to finish by speaking about the relationship between us and you. And I'm really passionate that you are not complementing our efforts. We are very much complementing your efforts. That we are out in schools, supported by local churches, but it is always complementing the work of the local church. Because if we speak to a young person and we, you know, what Rich shared, you know, that story in the street, if we speak to a young person and give them a glimpse of Jesus, that essentially they don't plug into the community, that we do have an ongoing relationship with some of them, but they don't get rooted in We're a YFC, they get rooted in a church. They get rooted in a local church. That's our heart for them ultimately. The young people that, you know, I've done mentoring in Hillbury, you know, we've worked in other schools in this region, that those young people would find their ways towards a community like this. And I'm really passionate. I will always believe in youth work because of the impact that it had on my family. I'll just share this with you as I come to a close. But 23 and a half years ago, I went to a youth group in the Easter holidays as a seven-year-old with my brother who was five. And we were sent there, not because my parents particularly wanted us to explore the Christian message and then report back to them on, you know, what it was, but because they wanted a couple of, you know, Easter holidays, it was a good place to go for a couple of hours. We really took to that. We asked if we could keep going to youth club, and then we asked if we could go to church on a Sunday. My mum took us to church to be polite, because she didn't want to just drop us off and not be there, so she sat in the service. Within a matter of weeks, she was saved after a communion service when I was the age of seven. And then my dad, a few months later, came to a mission, and he got saved in the matter of months afterwards. And then me and my brother took a little bit longer, but fast forward 23 and a half years, and my dad is the pastor of a church in Leicester. My mum works for a Christian charity. I work in Christian youth work, and my brother is a teacher in Liverpool and an elder of our church. And I don't tell you that to, you know, elevate our family or say our story is the blueprint for anything, but to say that through youth work, God can transform entire families. God can, you know, it's not everybody, it's not the path for everybody. God will find different people in different ways. And no story is less or more glamorous, or, you know, whether you became a Christian at five or 95, it's not a right or wrong way. But through youth work, through faithful youth work, God can transform entire families. And that's what I want. You know, that's what I pray for you guys, that you know, that you would seek the welfare of this place, that this, you would continue to have a heart for this place, even if they don't always have a heart for you, that both individually and collectively, that you would seek the welfare of this place, that we will continue to try and complement those efforts through the youth work, that we will continue to be thankful for the relationships that we have with local churches. We wouldn't exist without that. But that each of us individually, collectively, would seek the welfare of the place that we're in. Yeah, so that's